Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thank you very much for joining us, everybody. We're live worldwide on Close Up Radio, a service of the Telly Award-winning Close Up Television and Radio. It's a pleasure to have you here. Today, we're welcoming Brooke Carroll, founder of AC Strategies, where she supports small independent school leaders and board members to lead with clarity. Carroll typically works with heads of schools who are new to the position. ACES is the Greek word for insight. What she does, what Brooke does, is really 70% coaching, 20% mentoring, and 10% therapy. It's helping school leaders and board members articulate their concerns and reach into themselves to identify their strengths to address their challenges. Prior to launching AC Strategies, Brooke served as the head of a small elementary school with about 150 students for 9 years. During her tenure, the school would earn the distinction of an international baccalaureate school. Being the head of a small school is an amazing education in school leadership because you have to be involved really in everything. And Brooke says, of course, you know, there were many challenges, but she was able to really be more hands-on and collaborative with the teachers and the students, and it was everything she thought that was right about education. Brooke says most of her work is really about helping everyone understand their roles by distinguishing between governance, leadership, and operations. The board is responsible for overseeing the overall long-term health and sustainability of the school. The head is responsible for making sure that the school is running well during the year and the year after, overseeing operations such as admissions and fundraising, accounts receivable, everything that goes on within a school. Those are the three distinct layers that must work in concert to collaborate and know what each other is doing. ACStrategies.com is the website. I'll spell it for you. That's A-C-I-E-S, and then the word strategies.com if you'd like to connect more with Brooke and the team. She's live and direct from Maryland. Let's welcome her for this episode of Close Up Radio as my special guest. Brooke, thank you very much for joining us on the show today. I hope your summer is going well, and welcome to the program.
Thanks so much. It's really lovely to be here.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have an opportunity to chat with you, and we're having a terrific chat before we went out live to get things all ready to go. And you're also trained as an educational psychologist before pursuing school leadership. Tell us about that, and what were some of the early inspirations for you before going into school leadership?
Sure. Well, I got my doctorate in educational psychology because I really wanted to be in schools where I felt like I would have the most impact on children and families. That's where children live. That's the work of a child is to do school. And so I felt like if I was going to have an impact, that's where I wanted to be. So I started my career working with children and youth who had pretty severe emotional and behavior issues within schools, and just evolved as I kind of moved because of my family. I moved into different opportunities. I helped start a residential charter school in Massachusetts. And then when I moved to Maryland, did a variety of different things. I worked with Job Corps, overseeing five educational programs for them, and then got into independent schools as a director of residential life, overseeing a boarding program. So my work with schools has been varied, and I've worked in all different kinds of educational settings, but the focus has always been on helping students and their families and the educators that are surrounding students really be the best they can be.
That is terrific. When you created the company, what was the vision, sort of the mission? And tell us about a little bit more about some of the incredible work that you do. It is really unique.
Well, I will be honest with you. I didn't have a specific vision when I started my company. I knew I wanted to support educators as a consultant, and it's really evolved. When I started, I was more all things to all people, and I've been able to narrow my focus just based on my experiences with working with educators. Again, primarily in small independent schools. I've worked with schools of all sizes, but I really saw the need in small schools for support that's tailored to their particular strengths and challenges. I really see small schools as being different. The culture is different, the expectations are different, and the challenges certainly are different and the needs are different than larger schools that are typically more resourced, have more money, have more faculty and staff and things like that. So that's how my vision was really evolved and was created to be a company that focuses on the needs of small schools. It was really just through doing it and having this arise and I just kept hearing from people like, nobody's talking about this. And when I would get groups of small school heads together, they were just so appreciative. Thank you so much for letting us talk to one another. And we feel like we can be honest in this room and people understand our needs. And so just from working with people, I was like, wow, we really need to keep focusing on this.
Mm. What's an example of a small independent school for those who maybe are used to the public school atmosphere? Tell us a bit about small independent school structure.
Sure. So people know the difference between public schools and private schools, but there's kind of some nuances in between. So even in the public realm, there are charter schools, which often can be very small communities. There are magnet schools. There are all different kinds of different variations of public schools within the public system. The same is true in private schools. There are a lot of it has to do with the way the schools are governed. So there are private schools that are governed by or are run by churches. You know, Catholic schools, Episcopal schools, Jewish schools, and so those church organizations kind of oversee the running of those schools, and so they're not independent. They are, well, we call them parochial schools because they're run by the church. There are also private schools that are for-profit schools that might have a business owner or a company that runs them and is making a profit off those schools. There are chains of schools like that are for-profit private schools. So parents are paying money to go to those schools, but they're governed by a corporate entity. And then independent schools are those schools that are private. Parents are paying money for them typically, and yet they're governed by an independent board of trustees or board of directors, and they're independent of any other entity that's overseeing them and directing them in terms of how they operate. Those boards are typically called self-sustaining, so they nominate new board members to replace themselves, basically, and that's what makes them independent. Within the independent school world, there's a huge variation there too. There's very large schools, 1,000, 1,500 students, all the way down to schools of 10 students, and all different kinds of focuses, As you said, the school that I ran for 9 years became an independent baccalaureate school, and so it had that focus. But there are all kinds of schools with different kinds of focuses and different pedagogies of education. So I hope that answers your question.
It does, yeah. It does. You obviously, you've developed this expertise and you've found this niche. Tell us about that, how that was able to be expressed along the way.
Well, having the experience of working in all different kinds of schools, I worked when I, after I first left graduate school, I was in a public school that had this subset of the school that was for kids with very severe emotional and behavior issues, but it was in a public school. And then I went to a charter school and then went into a boarding school. So I've really seen the variety of different kinds of ways, or some of the variety, because there's so much, of ways that education is offered. And I think that there absolutely are commonalities across all of those vehicles for providing education. But I just, through my own training and my own self-training and things like that, I've developed my own perspective about what I have seen it works best for students and also for faculty and staff. And I really think that when you're in a community where you're known, and this is some research out of the psychological world and sociological world and things like that, when you look into research about belonging and inclusion and all of those kinds of things, when you feel like you are known in an organization or in whatever culture you're in, there are benefits to that. And so if you're in a school of 1,500, your opportunities to be well known by people, and particularly by adults, is, and by a lot of adults, goes down because there's just so many students there. As opposed to if you're in a school of 50 or 100, 150, your opportunities to be really fully, deeply known are much greater. So when I was head of a school with my 150 students, I knew all of their names. I could greet them each day by name. I knew their parents. I didn't know all their parents' names, but I knew who was connected to whom, and I knew a little bit about their families. And so those students felt known by the head of school, you know, and the head of school is like the principal. So the leader of the school knows my name. That has impact for a child, whatever their age, and it wasn't just me. So obviously your teachers always know your name, but other teachers in other classrooms might know your name as well, and the front office person who's at the front desk, the office manager, she knows your name, and the admissions director knows your name, and the head of school knows your name. So that starts to create a culture, a community of people who feel connected, deeply connected, and known. And it does. It's not always true, but it provides the opportunity then to be responsive to all those individual needs. There's a caveat there because, you know, not everyone does it as well as they could. But there's the opportunity there to be really responsive to each child's needs. And so, you know, through the work and the experiences I've had, I've really come to this place that a small school is just has so many benefits. And that's why I want to work to support them to be as best as they can be.
That's fantastic. You know, it's really amazing when you have an opportunity to do the kind of coaching that you do. And we talked about the transition into this world of coaching. It's so impactful, mm-hmm. too, and so meaningful. You know, I mentioned in the introduction governance, which is also something very important. Let's talk a little bit, maybe break that out a little bit, governance and what it actually means.
Sure. Yeah, and that's a big passion of mine right now, because I think there's a lot of confusion and misunderstanding about governance, school governance, and what a board of trustees or a board of directors does for an independent school. And if you think about what the head of school, what the administration does, they're running the school every day. They're making sure that the curriculum is implemented and that students are there, and that in independent schools that their tuition bills are being paid, and all of those kind of details that go on daily in a school, that the, you know, there's hot water and that the roof is on and all of those things.
Yeah.
there's a lot. So that's, you know, that the head of school and their administration, that's what they're focused on, is those day-to-day and year-to-year kind of endeavors. So heads of schools across the country right now are gearing up for the start of school. And so they're preparing to have their intro meetings with all of their faculty and getting classrooms set up and all of those kinds of things. And a board doesn't really need to be involved in those kind of things, because that's taken care of. But what heads and administrations can't do, because they're so focused on the day-to-day, is they can't kind of lift their eyes up and look out into the future or look around them and say, what are the threats to our school? Or what are the opportunities for our school? And that's what a board can do. That's what governance is all about, is looking around and saying, what are the threats and opportunities for this entity? And so it just takes a different kind of focus and thinking to engage in that kind of work, because it's so, what we know, what's so easy is to dive into the day-to-day work of a school. We've all gone to school, so we have some sense of what school is like and what it needs to be. And yet we don't all have experience thinking more generatively about these wider threats and opportunities. So that kind of sets up some of the problems that we see on boards, is when they get too mired in the details, in the weeds, and they're not really thinking very strategically about how to help the school sustain and thrive into the future.
Very important, absolutely. You know, you've offered up a lot of appreciation for how schools are really structured. You would think sometimes that a smaller school, you know, would be an easier task to run it, but there are actually aspects that can make it a little bit more difficult, huh?
Oh, you're making me laugh. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So in a larger school, a head of school would have layers of administration below them. So often would have an assistant head of school and then have division heads for each section of the school. So a lower school division head, a middle school division head, an upper school division head. And those people would be in charge of overseeing the faculty of those divisions and the curriculum of those divisions. In larger schools, there are admissions teams, groups of people who are focused on recruiting new students and things like that. There will be marketing teams to get communications out there, development teams to do fundraising. In a small school, there are no teams, and there's a lot less administration.
Yeah.
So when in my school, that was 150 students, and we had preschool and elementary, so there were kind of two divisions. I had a full-time education director and a full-time office manager, and then a part-time business manager and a part-time admissions director.
And that was it. And there was nobody on staff that did facilities or maintenance or anything like that. So I was involved in all aspects of the school. I was involved in curriculum development. I was involved with faculty and staff evaluation and training. I was involved in admissions. I gave admissions tours. I was involved in fundraising, in marketing, everything. And so there's two sides of a coin for all of these things. You know, it sounds overwhelming, and it was a lot of work, and I worked long hours, and yet the positive side is I really knew what was going on in that school, and communication was so streamlined, and we could be so nimble. We could try new things because it was just a small team that was making decisions. So there were some real benefits to it. I learned so much about running a school from that experience because I did it. I did it all. The maintenance stuff, I would have liked to have had somebody to help me with that. I think I mentioned it's even written in the kind of overview that I was in charge of wrangling the snakes out of our basement. So that kind of stuff I would have happily passed off. But it's just those are the things that small school heads have to deal with.
There's a lot on their plate, yeah, for everybody involved. Now more than ever, yeah, with everything going on, so many different things thrown at them. Your coaching practice, you know, being so niche and so specialized, tell us about some of the things that you see going forward. I'm sure, you know, you've had to pivot and you've had to make adjustments just like everybody else, especially in the last year or so with everything happening. Tell us about going forward and some of the incredible things that you're hoping to be able to tackle along the way.
Sure. Well, I think that heads of schools, as I just mentioned, have so much on their plate, heads of small schools particularly, but all heads of schools really have a lot on their plate, just the way that the whole industry has moved. We ask heads of schools to be educational leaders as well as business leaders as well as strategists, and that's just true across independent schools. So I think that heads of schools need all the support they can get, and I think having an executive coach or a leadership coach is tremendously beneficial. It's, you know, as they say, it's lonely at the top, and that is true of school leadership as well. The people that with whom you deal every day are your supervisees. They're your reports, direct reports, and so you can be as collegial as possible and be as friendly as possible. But those aren't the people that can serve as your support system. And certainly a board, that's one of the things that a board does is provides that support for the head. But I find it's very beneficial for people to confidentially work through a variety of issues in a coaching relationship. That can be everything from their own personal kind of issues and responses and challenges to thinking through strategies and that kind of thing. So I love that aspect of the work that I do. I'm both a coach and a consultant, but I really love the coaching work because I get to work with these incredible, just dedicated and intelligent people and help them kind of clear the smoke and really think clearly about whatever their issues are, and it's incredibly rewarding to me, and I
I see the benefits and I hear of the benefits as well. I said, it's funny, you mentioned this at the in the opening part, and I said this kind of flippantly that I do, you know, I'm part coaching, I'm part mentoring, and I'm part therapy. I don't, that's not anything really formal that I do. That's just kind of the way it feels to me. But I distinguish coaching and mentoring. Coaching really is about just asking the questions that help illuminate strengths within the individual. Whereas mentoring is where I can then provide my expertise and my experience. And so I do the mentoring very cautiously and carefully when I'm in a coaching situation, and only when asked, because I really try and allow the individual to come to their own understandings and realizations. But sometimes they just flat out say, you know, Brooke, what did you do when you were in this situation? And then I can offer that mentoring option. And then it's only when things get really bad that I need to do therapy. But so it's incredibly rewarding, and I think that it's something that particularly small school heads and new heads really should consider engaging with a coach.
That's right, exactly. And it's pretty easy to do. I mean, you have it all set up, and you've got the website ready to go.
Yeah.
It's really important for you to be a thought leader in this field, isn't it? Writing books, trying to connect with as many people as you can with this.
Yeah, I think that's true, because I think there is a need. I think there's a hole in the literature that really targets small schools. So I do. I've got I'm expecting my book, Governing the Small School, to be out later this fall or early winter. And I've got an online course for small school boards. And it's not so much that I need to be the one, but it needs to be done. And so I'm going to just jump in and do it. I guess that's my perspective, but I feel like there's a hole, and I do want small schools to feel like they have the resources that they need to address sometimes very challenging situations with their limited funds and limited resources, and as we said, everyone's wearing multiple hats and things like that, so. So that's why it's so important to me to get this information out there, is because I don't think that people feel like they have the support that they need.
Exactly right. And you're there to provide it, which I think is amazing. The website is really essential. Tell us about the website and the opportunity for people to connect there initially.
Sure. Well, it kind of highlights the areas that I focus on the most in terms of the board work that I do and the way that I can help boards. And there it's I do a variety of things. Like I said, I have an online course that I'm offering, and that's highlighted on the website. But I also do, I'll work with boards. I do orientation retreats, things like that. I do workshops for boards, both in person and virtually. So there's a whole governance section. I also do a lot of strategic planning. And that's a variety of kinds of things. It can be a full strategic plan, like people think of when you think of strategic plan. But I also help schools really just think about strategies for addressing any challenge. It could be a small challenge. And I've helped with things like curriculum development and things like that. So there's an aspect there.
And then there's an aspect of head search and support, and that's really where the coaching is highlighted there. But I also do help small schools find their next head of school, so I do a search process. So that's what's there. I also have a blog where I write about small school leadership and governance. So if folks are interested in just hearing my thoughts, that's where they can connect there.
That's terrific. And I want to mention the website. Again, I'll spell it out, www.acies, and then, of course, the word strategies.com. This episode is recorded in its entirety, so you can share the links, you can have other folks listen to it and learn from it as well. Brooke, this was really fantastic, and thanks for laying it all out and explaining it so eloquently. Obviously, you're very passionate about what you do, and the work you do is extraordinarily important as it guides and helps schools along the way with some of the interesting things that can come their way that can really bog them down. And I think it's beautiful work you're doing. So good luck, and hopefully we'll get a chance to maybe chat some more here, success stories, things of that nature. That would be a pleasure. But thanks for joining me on this episode today.
Thank you, Jim. This has been really, really a pleasure. I appreciate the opportunity to have this conversation.
You are very welcome. Keep doing the amazing work you're doing, and best of luck as the school year starts to come rather quickly around the corner, and we appreciate all the work you're doing. Brooke Carroll is our very special guest. I'm your host, Jim Masters. Thank you very much for joining us in this episode. We appreciate you as well. Stay tuned. I'll be back in less than 30 minutes with another amazing guest right here for you on Close Up Radio. Till then, for all of us, take care and be well. Bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.